This sermon is available for free download from www.graceunlimited.co.za. That's www.graceunlimited.co.za. There you will also find many other sermons, the speakers' blogs, events, pictures, links, web store, e-documents, and contact details. Simply follow the links to Grace Unlimited on Sermon Audio. Not far from the spot where they were sleeping was a castle called Doubting Castle. The owner of it was Giant Despair, and it was on his property that they were sleeping. The giant got up early the next morning, and walking up and down his grounds, he spotted Christian and Hopeful sleeping there. Then, with a fierce, threatening voice, he woke them up and demanded where they had come from and what they were doing on his property. Christian and Hopeful answered shakily that they were pilgrims and that they had lost their way. Then said the giant, "You have committed an offense against me by trampling in and lying on my property last night. Therefore, you must come with me." So they had no choice but to go with him because he was much stronger than they. They also had little to say in their own defense since they knew they were guilty. The giant forced them to walk in front of him until they reached the castle. There he threw them into a very dark dungeon, which the two men found disgustingly foul and smelly. They lay there from Wednesday morning until Saturday night without even a crumb of bread or drop of water. There was no light at all, and they had no one to ask what would become of them. They were therefore in a very evil situation, far from all friends and acquaintances. Christian felt doubly sorrowful because it was his ill-advised hate that had brought them into this distress. Now Giant Despair had a wife, and her name was Distrust. When the giant went to bed, he told his wife that he had taken a couple of prisoners and cast them into the dungeon for trespassing on his grounds. She asked who they were, where they were from, and where they were going, and he told her. Then she advised him that first thing in the morning he should beat them unmercifully. So, when he got up, he took a wooden club and went down to the dungeon. Even though they never said a word to provoke him, he started ridiculing and insulting them as if they were dogs. Then he beat them fiercely and mercilessly, and he so devastated them that they could do nothing to help themselves. They were unable even to roll over on the floor. When the giant had finished his attack, he left them there to mourn and grieve in their misery and distress. That entire day was spent in nothing but sighing and bitter lamentations. The next night, talking with her husband about them further and finding out that they were still alive, the giant's wife further advised him to counsel them to kill themselves. So when morning came, he went to them in a fierce manner as before. Seeing that they were in pain from the beatings that he had given them, he advised them that since they were likely never to come out of that place, their only option would be to do away with themselves immediately. "I am leaving you a knife, a rope, and some poison. You choose which means of death you prefer." "Why should you choose life, seeing that it involves so much bitterness and pain?" They begged and pleaded with him to let them go, but he only glared at them with frightening eyes. Then he rushed at them again. He would doubtless have killed them himself, but he suddenly fell into one of his seizures which he sometimes fell into in sunny weather. This caused him to lose the use of his hands for a time. So he once again left them to themselves. Then the two prisoners consulted between themselves as to what they should do. Should they take the giant's advice or not? Just that far for tonight. So there we have Christian and Hopeful trapped in Doubting Castle, and Giant Despair is their captor. I would like to just consider, maybe in about three evenings, what John Bunyan has to say about the issue of despair. And what he does here very carefully is, in his metaphor, in his allegory, he divides the issues involved in despair up into three distinct parts. And the first part that we've had a look at this evening is primarily the circumstantial or the secondary causes in despair, the things, the environment that you are in when you tend to fall into despair. And he's speaking about Christian people who fall into a state of despair. So his first concern is the circumstances or the secondary causes for despair. And then he will move on later to consider what the primary causes of despair are. And we'll have a look at that next time. And then finally he considers how it is that a Christian person can escape from a state of despair. Of course, he's speaking, as I mentioned now, he's speaking about Christian and Hopeful. He's speaking about Christian people, and believe it or not, Christian people do sometimes fall into a state of despair, and Christian people do become discouraged. And I'm sure there's nobody here who's been a Christian for any period of time who doesn't know what it's like to fall into a state of despair or discouragement. I've heard Christians say, and I won't mention who they are, they're public figures, and they've said this in public on television and that, who have said they don't know what it is to be depressed. They can't understand what depression is. But I, for one, can understand something of depression. I spent 3 years of my life in a state of terrible depression that I never want to go back into again. So while John Bunyan is describing the state of despair, I think maybe just as setting the scene, I think we need to remember again where John Bunyan was when he was writing about Giant Despair and Doubting Castle and Christian and Hopeful being thrown into a dungeon. I wouldn't be totally surprised if while John Bunyan was actually writing these words, he was experiencing something of the state of despair himself. While he was describing the circumstances in which Christian and Hopeful were becoming filled with despair, I wouldn't be surprised if he was looking at his surroundings, if he was looking at the dungeon, the prison cell that he was in, and if he was smelling the smells that he was actually smelling, and if he had been beaten in that prison cell himself. We know what it was like from historic accounts, what it was like for people who were imprisoned in those days. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's more reality in this than simply the allegory that he's telling here. There must have been some kind of authenticity to his story, otherwise he wouldn't have been able to describe this with such vivid detail. So you will notice the sleeping travelers, Christian and Hopeful, are discovered in this little shelter. You remember last time we left them just cowering for shelter in the middle of that storm where there was lightning and thunder and the rain was pouring down and the water level was rising and they feared that they were going to drown. So they managed to find shelter in this little half-baked shelter and they slept there until the morning, and that's where Giant Despair found them in the morning. And if you consider what Dr. Mack has to say with this, he says something like this, that this little shelter can be compared to Christians falling into sinful practices and then using unbiblical methods to deal with their sin. Now, the proper process for them would have been to come to the point where they stopped at nothing before they got back onto the road. Full-on confession of sin, full-on repentance, turning away from their sin and facing the consequences that came to them as a result of their sin. Obviously it was difficult for them to get back there, but it was a matter of urgency that they got back to the way on that night. When they realized they were wrong, they should have not stopped at anything. But here we find them cowering under the shelter. And what Dr. Mack says is that this is a less than biblical solution to the sin that they had committed that brought them into that place. Sins like this, keeping silent when you've committed sin, like David in Psalm chapter 32 verses 3 and 4, where he says, "When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long." And then he said, "Day and night your hand was heavy upon me, my strength was sapped as in the heat of summer." You'll remember that psalm, it's one of my favorites. I've quoted it here so often. So keeping silent about your sin is like that little shelter, saying, "I know I've sinned, yet if I just pretend it didn't happen, maybe it'll go away." And here we find these Christians hiding under this little shelter, and yet instead of finding freedom in just keeping silent about their sin, they eventually dragged into the castle of giant despair, and they face a more severe consequence to their sin. Then another way of sinning would be to be judging your sin by comparing your sin to somebody else who seems far worse. And Dr. Mack mentions these things like minimizing, excusing, or blame shifting when you consider your own sin. I think of Luke chapter 18 with the Pharisee who said, "Lord, thank you that I'm not like this tax collector or any of those other guys out there." And he mentioned all of the great things that he does. So he was minimizing his sin, he was considering himself at a higher level of personal righteousness than anybody else. So one little sin doesn't really matter. One little failing, it doesn't matter if I fail in one thing, because generally my life is a life of a higher standard. So judging your sin by comparing it to others who seem far worse is a good way of finding yourself in that little shelter where you can be pulled out in the morning by giant despair and dragged to Doubting Castle, and then meeting even his wife, who's called distrust. And then a third way, the final way of dealing with your sin as that little shelter, the unbiblical solution, is to try and compensate for refined sins. Sins that people generally don't call sin, like maybe being greedy or coveting something, we wouldn't come to somebody and say, "Oh, I've sinned in the most terrible way. I experienced a sense of greed today." You know, people would laugh at you and say, "Oh, yeah, well, I'm greedy all the time." Yet if you went out and committed adultery and you had to come back and say to somebody, "I committed adultery today," people would be shocked and they would say, "Oh, you did what?" But if you said, "I was greedy today," people don't consider it nearly as bad. So there are a whole lot of sophisticated, refined sins, and you can treat these refined sins by simply performing in other areas, like being faithful in church attendance, by doing good things, by reading the Bible more, or by praying more, or by doing nice things to other people, and all of those kind of things that you can do to make yourself feel better because you are guilty of more refined sins that you don't feel you have to deal with. So this little shelter can be compared to hiding in a place where you have settled for something less than a full biblical solution to dealing with your sin. So here we find them sleeping in this little shelter. They haven't found their way back to the road. They're busy sleeping. They're all out of it. And they haven't woken up in the morning. The giant's awake, but they're not awake. And they haven't taken the time to get back to the road. And here giant despair rudely wakes them up. He demands to know who they are and how they got on his property. And there we see Christian standing there all shakily. Now his composure is damaged, his confidence is gone, and he's fearful when he sees giant despair. And all shakily, he can't give giant despair an excuse. He can't give him a valid reason for why they're on his property. And all they want to do is get off his property and back onto the way, but now it's too late. Angrily, giant despair accuses them of trespassing on his property, and he seizes them and he forces them ahead of him all the way to Doubting Castle. Now, just before we move on any further, I want to just point out periodically as we continue in the allegory these circumstantial or secondary causes for falling into a state of despair. And even here John Bunyan has put forward a number of secondary or circumstantial causes for despair. Firstly, you'll notice that they are in a condition where they've lost their self-confidence. A Christian who's lost his self-confidence, and as you know, I'm sure I don't need to tell you, if you've been a Christian for any period of time, when you have sinned and you haven't dealt with your sin in a proper way, you lose your confidence to look other believers in the eye. You lose your confidence to go out and evangelize. You lose your confidence to conduct yourself as a joyful Christian in the eyes of the world. And here we've got Christian and hopeful, and they've lost their confidence because they've sinned and they've been caught and they haven't dealt with their sin properly. So here, a secondary cause of despair is that they no longer have their Christian confidence. You can see that in the fact that they were shaky. When giant despair comes along, I mean, look at Christian. You remember him standing in front of Apollyon and fighting off this great beast that was coming toward him. And Christian managed to fight this beast off. We wanted to kill him. Now suddenly Christian is standing in front of giant despair. He's got no more confidence, and he folds before giant despair, and he goes the way that giant despair tells him. Giant despair says, go this way to Doubting Castle. I mean, the allegory here is brilliant. It's beautiful. The giant is pushing him to Doubting Castle, and of course he begins to doubt. He falls into the state where he's got no self-confidence. Secondly, circumstantial and secondary cause is that they knew they were guilty. This is something that is surrounding Christian and hopeful despair. They know they're guilty. Thirdly, we see giant despair throwing them into a dungeon. Remember in the portion that I read tonight, he pushes them ahead of them, pushes these Christians ahead of them into the castle. He throws them into a very dark dungeon, and the dungeon is saturated with this disgusting smell, and there they are in this dungeon that is not a pleasant place to be. And you will see another circumstantial or secondary cause for their discouragement, for their despair. They are being subjected to conditions that are not pleasant. Of course, in any situation, we can compare ourselves, like say the very cold weather. One thing that I really don't enjoy is being cold. I find it very hard to keep my mood positive when I'm really cold, and the cold goes on and on and on. And here these people are in this dungeon, and it is dark and it smells very bad, and this is one of the circumstances that has surrounded their state of despair. And you will notice that when giant despair has thrown them into this dungeon, they don't eat and they don't drink for 4 days, and they're lying there in this dungeon from Wednesday morning to Saturday night, I think he said, I can't remember, and he hasn't given them food and he hasn't given them anything to drink, and here they are deprived of food and deprived of water and drink. Now in our current situation, living as we do, it is seldom that we have to experience what it's like to go for extended periods without food and without water. I think we can experience something of it in the hot weather here in this area, working on the farm, cutting grass or digging outside, and you feel thirsty. But I don't think we can really understand what it is for people like this to go for 4 days without food and water. Maybe food, but not water. It's a terrible thing to go without water for such a long period of time. And that was one of the circumstances, being deprived of food, being deprived of water, experiencing physical hunger, that was a circumstantial cause, a secondary cause in their despair. You will notice another detail that Bunyan adds there. He says that this dungeon had no light at all. It was pitch black. It was totally dark there. And there they sit day after day in this pitch black, not knowing whether it's day or night. And this is another reason, another secondary cause, another circumstantial cause for their despair. And you will notice, in addition to the blackness, is that there's nobody to ask. It's just total blackness. No matter how they call out, no matter how they shout for somebody to hear them, nobody can hear them. And I think we can identify with something of this in our current situation. The future for them was uncertain. They're sitting in the blackness. They don't know what's out there. They don't know what's surrounding them. They don't have anyone to speak to. They have no prospect of the future. They've got no communication. They don't know what's going to happen to them. There they sit in that dungeon, and very much I think of Gene and Sean going through this house deal that many of you have been through, I'm sure. you know, the worst thing is that nobody communicates with you. And you don't know if this lawyer's got these papers or not. You don't know if that person signed this document or not. You don't know if this person is even going to buy your house, because the agent's telling you stories and they've been telling you lies. There's no communication. You've got no direction. You don't know if this thing's actually going to happen or not. You don't know if you're going to be able to put food on the table again in this month or not. And here we have secondary, we have circumstantial causes for the despair that Christian and Hopeful have found themselves in. They've got no light, they've got no information, they don't know what the future holds, they've got no communication, nobody to speak to, they don't know what's going to happen to them. Then Bunyan adds that Christian himself felt personally bad. He really felt terrible, because it was him personally that had caused himself and Hopeful to end up in that situation. And I think in situations where people find themselves in a state of despair, Christian and Hopeful are together like this, and they're both in the dungeon, and they both sinned. Yet in this particular situation, Christian knows that if he hadn't persuaded Hopeful to climb over the wall and go into Bypass Meadow, that this thing wouldn't have happened to them. They wouldn't have been trapped in this situation. And I think of many situations in which people have done wrong things, and they've suddenly had this sick feeling in their stomach, and it's a sick, nauseous feeling that never leaves them. It goes on and on and on for years, and it never leaves them. I think of a friend that we used to know in the church who was driving a motor vehicle, and he had an accident, and his passenger was killed, and he survived. And he remembered that situation in his life for many years. He always was cautious when he was driving. You could see that he always remembered this accident that took place. And here's Christian in this situation, and the galling feeling is with him that it was his fault that they're sitting there. What a terrible situation. If he could do it again, he would not climb over the fence, and he certainly wouldn't have dragged his friend, his co-traveller, his companion with him over the fence at that point. So Christian feels this terrible sense of guilt, this horrible feeling, because it was him personally who was responsible for getting them into that mess. And it's a very real thing that if you don't deal with a situation like that properly, you can find yourself in despair. And Christian personally, as we will find out next time, he falls further and further and further into a state of despair. And Bunyan helps you to see how Christian is reasoning, how he's thinking through the situation, and how he fell deeper into despair. So that's just the beginning of Christian's story. So we've seen a number of circumstantial or secondary reasons why Christians can fall into despair. Now, he will continue to mention some more, but as the story goes on, Giant Despair had a wife, and her name was called Distrust. And of course, after a number of days, it must have been after a number of days, because John Bunyan was saying how they spent that time for 4 days without food and water. And then Giant Despair comes to his wife and says, "Oh, honey," I don't know what he called her, my gross wife, whatever you call a woman called Distrust. Other day I was walking on the grounds, and I came across these pilgrims who were hiding. They were trampling our property. Somebody fell into the hole. Remember, Mr. Vain Confidence fell down into the hole, and just Despair probably said to his wife, "I just left him there to die." But I found these others who were cowering there by the big tree. So I pulled them in and I threw them into the dungeon, and they're still there. So, of course, Distrust hates the fact that there are Christians who have wandered off the path, and yet they are not finished off totally in this situation that they've found themselves in. So she's saying to him, "Well, you know, you obviously haven't done your job properly, Despair. Why don't you go in the morning and beat them mercilessly, as Despair often does?" If you've ever been in a state of despair, you'll know what it's like, that it's that galling feeling that goes on and on and on, and it really does feel as if you're a person who's been thrashed and thrashed and thrashed, like Giant Despair beating these prisoners in his dungeon. armed with his club. In the morning, he goes in there, he insults them like you would insult a dog. He ridiculed them, he beat them fiercely and mercilessly. And Bunyan says they were helpless to defend themselves. They couldn't even roll over on the floor. And he left them there to suffer in their agony, in their misery. So here are some more circumstantial or secondary causes why people fall into despair. One of them is suffering physical abuse. I think of many martyrs over the years, and all of you know, I've said so many times, I've been reading Fox's Book of Martyrs, and how some of those Christians went on and on and on after beating, after beating, after beating, and how some of them just longed for death because their suffering was so terrible. And so one of the circumstances, one of the secondary causes of despair is physical abuse, suffering physical abuse. Then Bunyan adds this other one, that it could also be suffering verbal abuse, mockery or ridicule. And it often happens with Christians who stand up for what's right in this world. Remember, we went through Vanity Fair, where Christian and faithful at that time who went in there, they all they did was live the normal Christian life. And because Vanity Fair was so grotesquely distorted, Christian and faithful looked totally different, and they were singled out, and they were mocked, and they were ridiculed, and they were beaten. You remember the scene at Vanity Fair, and eventually faithful was martyred. And this is one of the circumstantial or secondary causes that Christians can fall into despair, because they are verbally abused, mocked and ridiculed, and it can go on and on and on. And then of course John Bunyan mentions suffering from physical disabilities, and he's mentioned how these Christians were beaten to the floor to a stage where they couldn't even roll over on the floor. And it can be like this with physical disabilities or fatigue or weakness or physical exhaustion, where you can be in a state where you can have a lingering pain, and there are people here who know what that's like, pains that just go on day and night and you've got no relief from your pain. This is one of the circumstantial causes of depression or despair. A person can fall into despair when you're struggling like that. Physical disabilities, fatigue, weakness or physical exhaustion. And I might just add, and I may be speaking out of place here, but one of the greatest challenges of getting older and older is the loss of these things: physical health, the loss of energy, the loss of being able to go on without falling into a state of fatigue, experiencing physical exhaustion incrementally, losing bodily faculties like eyesight and hearing and all of those things. And these are circumstantial causes or secondary causes for despair. So then we see, after Giant Despair has beaten them in this dungeon, the next night, as he goes to bed again, and he speaks to Distrust, his wife, she's surprised to hear that even after he's beaten them, they're still alive in this dungeon. After all of that, they haven't totally recanted, they haven't renounced their faith and turned away from God and said, well, you know, obviously God's not helping us here. So she's surprised to hear that they are still alive in the dungeon. So she tells him, well, why don't you go and explain to them that seeing life is so miserable and that they're never going to get out of here anyway, tell them to just kill themselves. Tell them to take their own lives. So in the morning, as you've heard in the story, he goes down with the rope, the knife and the bottle of poison. And he begins to counsel them. And notice that counsel is very important in this situation. You'll hear despair. If you can just look beyond the analogy for a moment, you know, seeing the giant despair and the Christians, despair, the voice of despair is speaking into the hearts of these people. And these are the thoughts that they're beginning to think. Well, if life is hopeless, maybe we should take our own lives. Giant despair is speaking to them. And he comes in there again fiercely. And he says to them, well, you guys are never going to get out of here, so your only option is to take your own lives. There's no way out. It's pitch black. Even if you could find your way out, you can't see a thing here. You don't even know which way to go. So he gives them those three things, the knife, the rope, and the poison, and he says to them, well, why don't you just choose which way you would like to die, and I will leave these things here for you. Instead, as Giant Despair is trying to tell them that they need to take their own lives in the most convenient way for them, they begin to plead for their lives and say to Despair, please, man, please, just let us go. You will know that this is no way to be released from despair. You can't plead with despair. Despair has no mercy. Despair has you trapped in a dungeon. Despair has you trapped in a situation from which you cannot escape unless you deal with this in a biblical way. And that will be further in the future when John Bunyan describes how they escaped from this prison. And as they're beginning to beg Giant Despair to let them go, you see the despair just becomes more overwhelming, and Giant Despair rushes at them, and you could see him in a rage, and he just wants to grab them and kill them himself. But you remember then he fell into one of those fits that he used to fall into sometimes on sunny days, and he was unable to use his hands. These were very convenient fits, as you discover later on. He's unable to use his hands, and he falls into that seizure, so he leaves them again for another day. So Christian and Hopeful sit there in the dungeon, and they discuss between themselves what they should do. Should they take Despair's advice or not? Was the situation really so hopeless that they should take their only option that Despair had given them and take their own lives? So here are further circumstantial or secondary causes for despair. One of them is, the first one is, other people agreeing that your situation really is hopeless. What a terrible thing it is, and I find this most discouraging when I hear people who've been to counselors who have counseled them. I say, when you went to this counselor, how did he help you? And one of the things that you always hear people saying when they've gone to counseling that hasn't worked is that they talked about it and they felt better, but the solution didn't last. If you know anything about this, your struggles that you've had with discouragement and despair, if you've fallen into despair because you've sinned and you haven't dealt with it in the proper way, if you go and talk to somebody about it, you will feel better temporarily, but then after a while the despair will come back with even more force because you still haven't dealt with the issue. And it concerns me when I hear about counseling theory and people who counsel in this way, that all you must do is you must sit and listen to a person speaking to himself, and you must never give them direction from Scripture and tell them how they must deal with this situation. And when other people come to you and you say to them, oh, my situation's hopeless, you say, I'm sorry, your situation's so hopeless. And they say, this is all I can do. And you say, oh, it looks like that's all you can do. I'm sorry, there's nothing else we can say to help you. And then you commiserate with the person in their struggles. I'm not saying we don't have sympathy with people who are struggling, but you don't agree with them that their situation is hopeless. While there's life and while there's breath, there's always hope. While God is alive, there's always hope. While we have the gospel in our hands, there's always hope. So one of the final circumstantial or secondary causes of despair that we see here is other people agreeing with you that your situation is hopeless, like Giant Despair did with these Christians in the dungeon. Then another one is other people saying that death is the only thing that you have to look forward to. Like, you're so trapped in the situation, I don't see any way out, so all you can do is make the most of it and look forward to dying, because then you'll be released from the situation. And this is exactly what despair told these Christians. And then another circumstantial or secondary cause of despair is when the real opportunity of suicide is present, and it is there over an extended period of time. When suicide is a real option and you just go on and on and on in the state of despair, realizing that this option is right here with me all the time. I can take this option. This really is a way out of this despair. This is one of the circumstantial or secondary causes of despair. You say, I could kill myself, And this is that brings about a terrible realization in your heart that if I'm thinking of killing myself, this despair really is something that I cannot escape from. I just want to read in closing tonight two texts. They're many texts, but just to show you two writers of scripture and how they faced circumstantial or secondary causes for despair as well. The first is David in 2 Samuel 22 verse 5, where he says, "The waves of death swirled about me. The torrents of destruction overwhelmed me. The cords of the grave coiled around me. The snares of death confronted me." You see a man who knows what it's like to stare death and despair in the face. Now, if you know anything about Psalm 2 Samuel 22, you'll know that this is a psalm that David wrote, and it's a psalm of immense victory. Yet this is how he's describing the situation he was in before the Lord helped him, before the Lord rescued him. You know, the waves of death swirling around him, the torrents of destruction overwhelming him, the cords of the grave coiling around him, the snares of death confronting him. So that's David. I mean, there are many places in scripture where you can read about David's discouragement at times and how he dealt with it. But then Job, in Job chapter 30, and I would just like to read a few verses of Job's personal experience and how he was facing the circumstantial or secondary causes of a terrible despair. And Job says in chapter 30 verse 15, he says, "Terrors overwhelm me. My dignity is driven away as by the wind. My safety vanishes like a cloud." You can see all of these factors that he's facing. He's got no safety. His dignity is driven away. Remember, giant despair beating those Christians in the dungeon, like ridiculing them like dogs. And here we've got Job facing these very same things. He says in verse 16, "And now my life ebbs away. Days of suffering grip me. Night pierces my bones. My gnawing pains never rest." The pain, the ongoing suffering that he was experiencing, as we saw with Christian and Hopeful. Verse 18, "In his great power, God becomes like clothing to me. He binds me like the neck of my garment. He throws me into the mud and I am reduced to dust and ashes. I cry out to you, O God, but you do not answer. I stand up, but you merely look at me." Verse 21, "You turn on me ruthlessly. With the might of your hand you attack me. You snatch me up and drive me before the wind. You toss me about in the storm. I know you will bring me down to death, to the place appointed for all the living. Surely no one lays a hand on a broken man when he cries for help in his distress. Have I not wept for those in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? Yet, when I hoped for good, evil came. When I looked for light, then came darkness. The churning inside me never stops. Days of suffering confront me. I go about blackened, but not by the sun. I stand up in the assembly and cry for help. I have been a brother of jackals, a companion of owls. My skin grows black and peels. My body burns with fever. My harp is tuned to mourning, and my flute to the sound of wailing." If you had to just do a study, I mean, just this chapter, never mind the whole of the book of Job, just this chapter, and you look at all of the circumstantial or secondary causes of Job's despair, you will find many, many, many more circumstantial or secondary causes to add to the list that we've looked at this evening. But I really didn't want to leave you here, but it's very awkward not to. I think let's move on next week and have a look at the primary causes of despair, and then we see how Bunyan extracts Christian and Hopeful from that dungeon of giant despair. We have considered the reality of some of the circumstantial or secondary causes for despair in the life of a Christian tonight. One of the saddest things is if you have never been truly saved, this really is all there is. There is no hope. and there's no God. If your life is filled with these circumstantial or secondary causes for despair tonight, these are the things that are pressing you toward Jesus Christ. Next time, we'll continue to look at the primary causes of despair in the life of a Christian.